You are very welcome to the last program of our Irish Latin American Connection series. My name is Mary McNamara, and in our past three programs, we have explored the experience of Irish people who have travelled to Latin America as part of their academic research, motivated by feelings of solidarity or political interests. These experiences highlight the strong humanitarian tradition of the Irish. On today's programme, we will explore the past and present of that tradition in Latin America. The 3rd of August 2016 saw the centenary of the execution of Roger Casement, a humanitarian activist, Irish nationalist and a poet. His report on the abuses suffered by the Putumayo indigenous people at the hands of the Peruvian Amazon Company was regarded as a brilliant piece of journalism that brought the personal voices of victims and perpetrators of the abuses to the heart of the colonial power. Angus Mitchell is a historian and cultural critic. He has spent the last 20 years investigating the life and legacy of the British consul and Irish nationalist intellectual Roger Casement. This scholarship has helped to retrieve a vital moment in the history of human rights and the environmental tragedy underscoring the modern awakening of Amazonian and sub-Saharan Africa. Through his engagement with Action Research, Mitchell was reconfigured one of the longest-running controversies in world history concerning the authenticity of the Black Diaries deposited in the UK's Natural Archives in Kew. In recent years, Mitchell has extended his focus of interest to include the circle of anti-colonial activists and pacifists of the early 20th century.
I've lived in Ireland now for 16 years. I came here in 2000, although I'd worked here mainly in the National Library since about the mid-90s. And my interest in Casement stems from my time in living in Brazil, when I began to look at the history underpinning environmental destruction in the Amazon, and I came across references to Casement's investigation into crimes against humanity or human rights abuses, as we would call them today, in the Northwest Amazon in the years before the First World War, and I then got drawn into trying to understand more about Casement, which ultimately brought me to Ireland and then sucked me into the vortex of Irish history from which there is no escape. He's one of these very sort of complex figures operating at the very heart of empire, in many ways very privileged, comes from this slightly declining Anglo-Irish background, and then finds his way into the British Foreign Service, colonial service, and then starts essentially bearing witness to colonial expansion at the end of the 19th century, which is largely built upon the need, rapid need, for resources, very similar to today. And then what he sees begins to outrage him, and he starts a very intricate and complex investigation of colonial power relations. And this is not merely in South America, but also in Africa, across that whole Atlantic region. And it's a case that's very much rooted in 19th century anti-slavery investigation. And he, of course, teams up with the great advocates for the anti-slavery movement in London, the Anti-Slavery Society and the Aborigines Protection Society. And then, but with Casement, he always has his eye not merely on Ireland, but also on the future. And much of what he talks about and how he, in a way, frames his analysis of what's happening is very contemporary as we understand it now, because he really does start to see the need to essentially invest people who have been dispossessed of all real power and agency by the sort of juggernaut of modernization. And he begins to speak about human rights and the need to essentially invest a sense of humanity into these people who have been totally, not merely ostracized, but abused in the most appalling, violent ways by the system. So in that way, he's a very contemporary figure, Casement. And it's really taken 100 years since his execution for us to really understand what a powerful and important and contemporary voice he is. And I'd say that in many ways, Casement's real history is yet to be told, because I think he will become more important in the years to come, because so much of what he bore witness to 100 years ago is possibly even more relevant today than it was back then. I mean, human rights as we know it is very, really, very relatively recent. Obviously, under the Declaration of Human Rights, 1948, it sort of starts to have a real structure, but it's really since the 1970s, really, with the collapse of and the gradual collapse of communist regimes around the world, and indeed the need to almost create a discourse for globalization. I mean, human rights isn't always a good thing in many ways. I mean, it can be used in very abusive ways, and we see this particularly in the West, in the way that the West is able to hold governments to ransom for human rights outrages, and yet perhaps the worst human rights abuses are manufactured by regimes of Western power. I mean, you only have to think of drone strikes, for instance, as an obvious example of that. I mean, what's particularly, I think, disturbing in many ways about Casement, and also threatening still to this day, is that he doesn't really just blame those who were on the ground and, in a way, directly committing the crimes against humanity, but he really roots those criminal actions and violence in a much larger structure of power. And in that sense, he ultimately points the finger at the system itself. So if you read much of both his official and unofficial writings, and he was an absolutely prolific writer, he wrote an immense amount, but this notion of the system is constantly recurring, and he really sees the system being at fault. And I think part of the kind of, again, the interesting Casement is that he's not merely a dry Mandarin official writing a report that is going to expose horrors and perhaps to some extent almost continue or allow the regimes that are responsible for those tragedies to continue, but he really tries to set up alternative ways by which the abuse can be brought to an end. And in the end, he sees that as being a responsibility of an independent Ireland. And I think he has a very strong hope and aspiration that Ireland, once independent, will be able to essentially develop a more compassionate form of foreign policy that addresses the massive social injustices and inequities produced by the larger sort of imperial capitalist systems.
Title deeds on the Amazon are drawn up in blood. If the Congo rubber was red rubber, Amazon rubber is crimson rubber. The rain of hell on the Putumayo has its parallels. Elsewhere, in many parts of the vast wilderness of waters and forest, which comprises the greater part of the territories of the so-called republics of Bolivia, Peru, and of Colombia, with a great part of Brazil included too. The history of slavery, you might say, remains to be written. Mankind is only beginning to realise that it did not perish on the plains of Gettysburg. A viler slavery, more atrocious far, rules today vast areas of South and Central America, and the peep given behind the scenes by this glimpse at the tragedy of the Putumayo will entitle civilised men to ask themselves whether their work is indeed done as they had supposed.
We have just heard a quote from Roger Casement's correspondence with journalist H.W. Nevison, and 100 years later, some of the issues being raised by Casement can be considered very relevant by the people in Latin America and by those Irish people who still volunteer and travel to Latin America in missions of solidarity and learning. Today in the studio, we have some of those people. Near FM's Sally Galliana is joined around the table by Sean O'Connell and Linda O'Sullivan. Sean graduated from UCD in 2010 with a degree in law and later completed a master's in human rights law from the University of Nottingham. Sean volunteered on the Nicaragua 2010 project and returned as a team leader in 2012 and 2013. Linda O'Sullivan, a human rights activist from Belfast, was involved in the peasant struggle in Celandín, Peru, against Yanacocha, a powerful gold mining company.
I suppose that looking at Roger Casement, the work he did, and how he was in some way so vocal in denouncing human rights violations that the people in Latin America were suffering at the time. So how important or relevant do you think is his figure today and all the work you do? And I want to pose this question to you, Linda, first, because actually what you are doing is in the same country that Roger Casement was in Peru when he did that report about the treatment by one of the rubber companies of the indigenous people in Peru. And you are doing something similar with a mining company. So will you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you are doing?
I'm involved in a grassroots struggle to protect the land and the water from a mega mining threat. The company's called Yanacocha, which is made up of, the majority shareholder is based in the US. It's Newmont Mining Corporation, which is the second biggest mining company in the world. And then also there's a Peruvian partner, Buenaventura, and also it's backed up by the World Bank. So basically the project would destroy 4 mountain lakes, which is the source of 5 rivers. And these 5 rivers provide water for thousands of peasant farmers who live downstream. So the farmers themselves and the communities have organized themselves and rose up and said no, they don't want this mining project imposed, because it would mean the death of their communities, really. Their livelihoods would be destroyed. And their ancient Andean culture would also be destroyed. So over the past 4 years or more, the peasant communities have resisted, but this has been met with intense oppression on behalf of the Peruvian state and intense manipulation on behalf of the mining company. And it's been a difficult struggle. But the people remain strong. And what I've been doing basically is just helping get the word out of what's going on. And whenever I arrived, the people, they were very successful in getting the word out in Spanish, but there wasn't much information that was getting out in English. And I thought it was important because, the company is based, the main shareholder is based in the US. So what I've been doing is reporting on what's been happening, the human rights abuses, the oppression, the attempted imposition of this mega mining project. I've written numerous articles. I've started up an English language blog on the issue, Congo Conflict. Also just getting involved on a local level with the organization of the resistance movement.
Okay, so very much as we were saying about a little bit like Roger Casement, what you are doing is very much giving some visibility at this situation in Latin America, in Peru, that otherwise probably wouldn't even be reported by media.
Yes, in Peru, as in many other countries, the mass media is completely controlled and manipulated. 80% of the mass media is controlled by one conglomerate, which has Inversiones, what's that, investment, has investments in mining companies, construction companies. You know, so mass media isn't going to act against its own interests. So what the social movements have done is taken the social media to get the word out. And yeah, like what I've tried to do is spread the word to the English language speaking world, I suppose. There is awareness of what's going on to kind of generate more solidarity, and also so that the company and the proven government know that people are watching and they can't get away so blatantly with the abuses that have happened to date. Like with regards to Roger Casement, he is quite a well-known figure here in Peru because of the work that he did.
Tell me, what made you decide to get involved with Latin America, and particularly with Nicaragua?
Well, actually, my first, I suppose, interaction with Latin America was in college. I studied law and ended up taking modules in international law, and I was very interested in that side of things, and came across, obviously, internationally famous case of Nicaragua versus the United States of America, which was focused on the United States backing Contra forces from Honduras to fight the Sandinista government. It was fascinating for me. I hadn't much awareness about the situation or issues in Latin America, but it really grabbed me just how big an impact another state could have on the development and progress of another state. I think we often think of states that are experiencing extreme poverty as failed states, they just haven't been able to get their act together. But for me, reading about this case in college, it was fascinating that it was largely due to the interference of another state that was stemming so much progress or was causing such a dangerous situation nationally in Nicaragua. So that's how I first came interested in it. And luckily, in UCD, we run a volunteer program for students to go to Nicaragua. We also send students to Uganda, Tanzania, India, and Haiti. So obviously it was a natural fit. So my interest was spiked through the case and my studies, and then obviously opportunity came to get involved more in a hands-on way with the issues in Nicaragua and visit the country. So that was my first experience, first awareness.
So do you think it's so easy to fight now for human rights in Latin America when sometimes violations are obscured by what everyone calls development?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, it is very difficult. You know, the criminalization of the human rights defenders and the oppression of social protests is only getting stronger. People are continuing to be killed for their participation in people are continuing to be killed just because they're standing up for their rights. So it is a very dangerous situation. And the military and the police just are put at the disposition of the companies. You know, like Peru actually, it's legal for the police to sign agreements with corporations to provide private security. So people don't know if the police are defending them or defending them. So it is a very tricky and dangerous situation. But the people here, like the campesino and indigenous communities, they don't have any other option but to continue fighting because it's their lives at risk. It's their cultures and it's the lives of future generations. So they're going to continue fighting. And I think it's important for people in other parts of the world to continue to show solidarity and also address where the problem comes from. You know, the problem of extractivism comes from the demand in the so-called developed world. So we have to look at ourselves and look at, are we contributing to the problem? And how we can change that at home.
It's a very interesting development, I suppose, in the last few years, the rise of the corporate sector. I mean, I just read there recently, I think 42 of the world's richest 100 economies are now companies. So you have many companies who are far, have far more resources than states themselves, yet accountability is an issue. You know, I mean, they can behave like states, they can be as powerful as states, but they don't have the same accountability, obviously, as states. I agree with Linda 100%, though. I think while accountability for private companies working in Latin America is a huge issue, a lot of it does come down to the demands in the West for obviously these types of products. Obviously, a lot of these companies are actually domiciled or based in the West, in the United States and in Europe. So we certainly have to take some responsibility ourselves in terms of pressurizing our own government where these companies are domiciled, making certain consumer choices that will be more favorable to ethical production or sourcing of foods or whatever the case may be, or natural resources. But I still do think, regardless of whether it was, as you say, a military in the past, substitute now for corporate, there's still accountability for the state itself, for states in Latin America, still has to be the main issue. You know, whether it was an army that's involved, a military intervention, or a company, you know, there has to be some accountability for the state to protect the human rights of its citizens. And so you're right, it's been a development, it's like a substitution in a way, but the buck still stops with these governments. And as Linda said, especially when it comes to protecting grassroots movements and human rights defenders, and prioritising private interests over those citizens, they're certainly not taking that responsibility, and they haven't been held accountable. So it's certainly a worrying development.
And how can we do that, Linda? How do you think we can really change this? How can we pressurise, as Sean was saying, companies that are worth sometimes much more than the economy of a whole country, actually, into changing their behaviour and their activities?
Yeah, it's a tricky question to answer. I don't think there's any one solution. I think there needs to be a lot of different solutions. Pressurizing governments, holding them accountable internationally is very important. Supporting grassroots movements who are standing up against the corruption, against the imposition of these damaging projects is another important element. And also, as I said, looking at how we live in the West, and how this model of how we live is being imposed in countries in Latin America and other parts of the world.
Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. Echo all that. It's a very complex problem, but in fairness, in the last few years, it has been recognised as a problem, whereas in the past, I think it largely went without recognition. But I think people are becoming more and more aware now that private interference or private interests are causing all sorts of harm across the world. But just to tie it back in with the obviously the Roger Casement, and even what Linda's involved in as well, one thing is obviously awareness is. Are people aware or as aware of how their choices and how these companies operate in the developing world or in Latin America in particular? And I think there is definitely a gap there. I think people recognise that companies don't always behave themselves overseas, but I think sometimes they just maybe limited to large oil companies or some extractive industries. But it goes much further than that. You know, food production. Obviously, there's water resources, and I think the work of the likes of Linda. I mean, look at what Roger Casement was involved in as well, bringing these issues back to countries where maybe the demand starts from for these products or for these resources, and definitely creating an awareness. And you see things that have actually come about because of that type of awareness raising through like Sir Roger Casement, things like fair trade initiatives. So it starts with the information. You're going nowhere unless everyone's aware of the issue and how big it is and how they're involved in it. I think solutions will obviously drive from that. I don't think we have the full picture yet of how dangerous, unaccountable private enterprises operating in Latin America is, I think we have a fair idea that it's terrible, but I think the full extent of it is just continuing just to get become just to continue to emerge now. So the likes of Linda and people working in those issues in Latin America to continue creating awareness and bringing the message home. And obviously, just as I said again before, countries themselves have to be responsible for regulating how companies operate in within their borders. You know, it's we can discuss it for hours on end in the West or in Europe about what we want to see these companies do in Latin America, but the countries themselves that they're operating in, they certainly need to stand, take a stand and attempt to regulate them and protect the human rights of their citizens over the interests of a company.
Pero aunque no podemos adivinar el mundo que será, bien podemos.
Though we can't imagine the world in the future, we can very well imagine the world we wish to live in. The right to dream is not among the 30 human rights the UN proclaimed in 1948, but if it wasn't for the right to dream and the waters it gives to drink, all the other rights would die of thirst.
Y por las aguas que da de beber, los demás derechos se morirían de sed.
And with the voice of Uruguayan journalist and philosopher Eduardo Galeano, we close our series. We want to thank our guests today, Sean O'Connell and Linda O'Sullivan, and Dr. Angus Mitchell. We want also to thank all who helped us to put this series together. If you want more information or to listen to the programmes, please visit our site at nearfm.ie. This series was co-produced with the Latin American Solidarity Centre. For more information, visit lasc.ie.
This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.